Hi, this is Don Dokken, and you're listening to Dave and Shane. Watch their show because they're really cool guys.
Hey, everybody, this is Joel Linter.
Hi, everybody. This is Rob Halford.
The Rudy Sargent.
Hey, this is Steve Hackett.
Hey, folks, this is Rick Emmett of Triumph, and we're talking rock with Dave and Shane.
Oh, yes. This is awesome. This is so cool.
Yeah.
Don Dokken.
How's it going?
I'm just kind of waking up.
He's just waking up. There he is with all those beautiful, beautiful records behind you.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. I wish they'd stop falling off the wall.
Is that right?
I got this two records. I go, there must be... Maybe it wasn't a good record. I don't know. I got to get a ladder and climb up there and try to put grill glue on it. I don't even have them up. Those are just the American ones. They go all the way down.
Oh, and man.
The truth is, when you get back in the day, you know, Japan, Spain, Italy, they would give you a gold record. And sometimes they'd have like the Elvis thing with the red velvet.
Remember? Yeah. Oh, nice.
Remember those?
Yeah, that's right. Like,
I don't think I want that hanging on my wall.
Right.
I'm not Elvis.
Looks like a very serene. Is this where you do some of your writing?
I tilt it up. That's
Whoa,
crazy.
Nice. Screen. Beautiful.
That's
those arches.
Yeah, it looks like a church.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's why we bought it. The architecture is very crazy. And we're the second owner. And, you know, they didn't use any nails.
Really?
Ooh. You wouldn't get away with that in L.A.
All dowels, huh?
Yeah.
All dowels. And if you know anything about construction, it's called mortise and tenon. You know, they notch out the beams and pound them in. The guy was eccentric, to say the least. So.
that place will be around for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the way they made them hundreds of years ago. It lasts forever, like cabins, you know. Notch them in, and I don't have any neighbors. That's why we moved up here, my missus and I. I'm looking out right now, and I can see four mountain ranges 100 miles from here.
Oh, that's amazing.
Beautiful. When was that built, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't know, about 40, 50 years ago. He bought the mountain. That's why it's called Cloudstone Manor. He just bought the mountain, and he actually dynamited like all 4 years. And because when I was trying to put a yard in, I was like, why is there like 8 million little pieces of rock everywhere? He basically blew up the mountain, which is illegal now, by the way.
Yeah.
But he did it so long ago, he blew up the mountain to flatten it out and put the house way up high. And so, but I tell people like the song Fugitive or all that, it was my inspiration because I am isolated. My driveway is a mile long.
Nice.
I love that beard, man. You got
really?
Gray hair.
Yeah.
I didn't shave. I like it. I didn't shave for 2 years during COVID.
Yeah.
And our first show back was the Kiss Cruise. I don't like doing the cruises. I don't want to be stuck on a boat for 6 days.
Right.
Because I don't gamble, get wasted, and stuff my face. And you only play 2 hours a night. Yeah. So I showed up and there was LA Guns and Warrant and all the other bands and everybody had a beard like yours.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Called the COVID beard.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Did you have one this big or did you keep it kind of
a little shorter? A little shorter. Okay. My problem is, I don't know, it's because of my genetics, but mine like gets all fuzzy, like in front of the ears, like cotton balls here.
Okay.
It looks kind of like I'm homeless. Yours is nice and shaved. And then I tried to trim it because my girlfriend likes me unshaven. Or it's like now, 5 o'clock. And I tried to trim it and I fucked up. I didn't have it adjusted right. And all of a sudden I had a big bald spot and I went, well, that's the end of that beard.
Yeah, I do that all the time. So that's when it goes away.
Yeah, I get a scissor. Yours looks like you've been practicing for years.
I just trim like right in here because it'll go out real far and be puffy.
That's what mine does. It gets like,
I hated that.
Here, like abominable snowman.
Yeah. The Santa look.
I love it. Yeah, it's 'tis the season almost, right? Santa shade.
Almost. I can't believe it happened so fast, you know?
Oh, man.
This year.
Yeah.
So your flew by.
So slow. COVID went slow, and now this year went right by.
Exactly. Yeah. Heaven Comes Down is the album, and this is the 13th album, right, from Dokken. I mean, how does it feel? I mean, you were pretty inspirational. It's crunchy. It's just really crunchy.
Yeah. I have to give the Sonics to Kevin Shirley, who's Kevin Shirley. And when we finished the record, I said, I can't mix it. I don't have my, I don't own a, I had a recording studio for years, but I don't have any. I sold it. And I said, we got to get somebody to make, as you said, crunchy. And Kevin Shirley. So I was just looking around YouTube and the internet, see whose albums are coming out, listening. And I heard the new Iron Maiden album. And I went, oh, that sounds good. And I looked at the name, Kevin Shirley. He's done everybody, man. He's famous. Yeah. So I called him up, and I thought that'd be perfect. I can go to L.A. because I have a house there. And he's always been in Malibu. It's called Caveman Studios. And we're talking about mixing the record. And I said, yeah. And we talked about money and how long we do it. And I was going to go there. And he said, oh, and by the way, I live in Australia now.
Oh, wow.
And I went, huh? And I said, well, and he said, well, you can get on a plane. I said, I don't know. Yeah. So we literally phoned it in, as they say. We phoned it in, and I literally didn't sleep for a month. Because, you know, when you're in the studio, if I'm just sitting there and I say, can you turn the snare up a little bit? Well, that takes 2 seconds. Yeah. Can you make the kick drum a little tighter? That takes 2 seconds. So I give him my notes on the phone, and then he emailed me back a mix and 5 minutes later. So I had my phone next to my bed, and every time I had a motorcycle sound, I go, that's Kevin. So he, you know, we're going back and forth, back and forth, back. And so I didn't sleep much because, you know, the time difference. But it was hard to mix. You know, honestly, when he first started out, he sent me 2 mixes and I was very disappointed. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't like this. And he said, well, I thought you wanted the, as he called it, the classic Dokken sound. And I said, no, the songs can be that like that, but that was 30 years ago. Let's move forward into 2022. So I said, I just want it punchy and in your face and beautiful and powerful and big harmonies. And, you know, I didn't want to sound like 1985. So we had to get on the same page.
Mm. Is that tricky, Tom, with like you want the classic metals coming back, that feel, you know, we talked to several people this year, just that classic metal sound, but yeah, obviously you want to update it. Is that kind of tricky to ride that line with both sides of the coin?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see the point of trying to go back to 1985.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, technology, it was, and you know, the record companies in the '80s, you know, when there was still radio instead of Zoom and podcasts, you know, they wanted the songs compressed really tightly. They didn't want the drums loud. They wanted the vocals out front. They wanted the solo really loud. That's what radio was.
Yeah.
But those days have kind of gone, you know, they're kind of gone now. So I just said, let's just make it like hi-fi.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard records are coming back. I have to go find a record player.
I still have to get one. Shane gets me into vinyl. I still got to find a record player.
I just got a box of records from Warner Brothers a week ago. It's a Dokken Greatest Hits just came out.
That's right.
And they sent me 4 test pressings of the new record. And we all have to sign it. And then people buy them for a shitload of money. Because the test pressings are like audiophile. Really, really high end. So I've got 4. And I never thought, honestly, that vinyl would come back.
Yeah.
They said during COVID, like, vinyl outsold CDs. And I said, vinyl? I don't think anybody owns a turntable anymore. I actually went to, like, a Best Buy, and they were selling turntables.
Oh, it's crazy now. I mean, I thought it would have died down after COVID, but it's still going up.
Yeah, like, the younger generation seemed to be getting into the whole, I call it a ritual, you know? You open up the record, Trucks ran, you pull out the inner sleeve, you look at all the credits, you see pictures, all the lyrics are on there, which is cool.
Yeah.
You know, and then you put it on the turntable and dust it off and drop the needle. And it's almost like a ritual, you know? And it's just
a ritual
blast. It's a ritual. I remember I have some records behind me that actually have the platinum, and on the bottom it has a cassette.
Oh man, I love that. Cassettes were back for a little bit too. Not to the extent of vinyl, but right, Shane? I thought they were.
Yeah, they dipped a bit because there are a lot of them are falling apart at this point.
Yeah, right.
I know a couple bands that I've met, and they're actually the new kids. They're actually manufacturing their demos on cassettes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say they sell like hotcakes, and I'm like, but they don't sound very good.
Yeah, I know.
If you can get through that,
the tapes are gone.
Everything sounds like there's a snake in the background hissing, you know?
Yeah.
Is it hard when you, you know, you talked about kind of going back and forth with Kevin Shirley a few times on the sound. Is that just as hard as the writing sometimes? Like just as hard as getting the riff where you want it to be or, you know?
Yes, it's very difficult. I just do what I've always done in Dawkins as a producer is I think each song is like a painting. And, you know, I've listened to a lot of records. I won't say who. But it just seems like they get a drum sound, they get a guitar sound, they get a bass sound, and they just run with it for every song. But I think every song should be treated, you know, by itself. So if you look and listen to the record, I don't know if you have the whole record, some of the drums are a little wetter, a little more reverb. Some are a little drier in your face. The solos, John's playing a lot cleaner, not a lot of the massive amount of distortion like some of the more thrashy bands. So we had some, we were changing guitar sounds per song constantly, what I felt fit the song. And that was the tricky part. I mean, I'd sometimes spend hours with John going, nope, that's not it. Nope, that's not it. More treble. Nope, less bass, more mids. And we get technical. I say, I want 2K here. I want 800. That's up here in the cymbal range. And I need a little bit of spark on your guitar and it's too distorted. And so every song I try to treat individually. And I think we accomplished it only by accident because of COVID and because when my arm got paralyzed, I couldn't play guitar anymore. I mean, there's my good hand. Yeah. There's my claw. The Freddy Krueger hand, they really fucked me up.
Oh, man.
And it was so sad. Yeah. I went into surgery. It's been 3 years. I went in for this hand. It was these two fingers. They call it trigger finger.
Right.
It would just go like this and like bend over like a Ronnie James Dio sign. They would just fold and I'd have to go, oh, fuck, that hurts. And the doctor, and he said, hey, your spinal cord's compressed in your neck. And I said, I feel fine. And they kept saying, oh, did you get in an accident? Nope. Did you fall off your motorcycle? Nope. Somebody hit you with a bat? Nope. You know, we didn't know why, but this right in the bottom of my neck, the spine was, the vertebrae was being compressed. So I found a specialist, went to LA, the top hospital that I can't mention because we're in a lawsuit, and got a specialist. I mean, my scar goes from the bottom of my head all the way down my back. I look like a fucking corpse. Excuse my language. And then when I woke up, my right arm was completely paralyzed. Everything's gone. All gone. It took me a year to be able to do this. I kept trying. And I put my hand up and just fall down. I put it up and just fall down. I go, and I said, what the hell did you do to me? But when you're right-handed, I've learned, you know, that simple things, washing dishes, making the bed, typing on the computer. I can't play guitar anymore, which really put me into a deep depression. I've been playing guitar since I was 10. And, you know, maybe the misconception about Dawkins with Lynch was, you know, George wrote the music and I wrote the lyrics, but that really wasn't true. Yeah. I wrote a lot of the guitar part. I wrote a lot of the songs. And now I'm looking at my guitar right now. You know, I had bazillions of them. So I just kept one electric and went my span. And I used to play flamenco style. So you roll your fingers like this on the right hand. That's what I've always done. So on Dawkins albums, if it was an acoustic song or arpeggiated, as we call it, I would do it because that's not George's thing. So I couldn't play anymore. It really broke my heart. You know, it was like, yeah, I swear it was like I lost a loved one, you know, because I've had guitars laying around my house next to my bed. I learned the hard way. When I go to bed, I set my guitar down on the floor, my acoustic, and I get up at 2 a.m. to go to the bathroom and forget the guitar was there, and I step on it. Oh, you know, shit. And I go, ah, oh, shit, you know, and things went crunch. And I'd be off. I'd be off to the luthier, and the whole front end's caved in. And Jim Foote was a well-known luthier, and he said, "What'd you do? Get up in the middle of the night again?" He had me down.
Yep.
He goes, "John, buy a guitar stand, all right?" I'm looking at it right now. There's about 8 big splits in it. And he said, "I don't know if I can fix it." I said, no, this is, I've had this guitar since I was 18 years old. You have to fix it. But that's the way it is. It was very sad. I guess we were lucky. I wouldn't say it was luck, but because of COVID, before my surgery, and John and I, we were just writing and writing and writing. Nothing else to do. You know, we all have our home studios, and we ended up with, like, I think 27 songs.
Wow.
And I set the bar high because it's our last record. We won't be doing any more records. That's just the truth. I can't. You know, I can't project my spiritual or my ideas into someone else's brain. I have to play it and put on a tape recorder, then you do it for real. So we had all that downtime. And I really thought, you know, it's been, what, 10 years since Broken Bones? And I thought, man, guys, if we're going to go out, let's go out with a bang. Every song better be damn good. So we wrote 26 or 7. John wrote like half the record. I wrote half the record. Everybody wrote. And I just sat there and lived with it for like a month. It's funny. You write a song and you're all excited, you know. Yeah. You're up till 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm drinking a glass of wine. I thought, the song's killer. You know, like in the morning, I go and start, play it back. I go, that sucks. Wow. Or John, because John grew up listening to Doc, and he's the youngest in the band. And he was a big fan of Lynch's, and he had that style. And he would call me and say, I like the song, Don, but I think you wrote that on Tooth and Nail or Unlocking Key. I was repeating myself, kind of, you know, lyrically, and the music was too similar. And I said, let me call you back. So I go, I'm trying to go on YouTube or something to find one of my old records and go, oh, you're right. It does sound like Jaded Heart, or it does sound like Will the Sun Rise. I started repeating myself. So that was a problem. So John was my go-to guy to stay away from regurgitating the same old stuff, because I was complaining that my peers, in my opinion, they have that one great song, they do a little video, and then you guys must experience this. And the rest of the album kind of be filler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got the two good songs and the lead track, then the third song's like the best one, and then the rest is kind of like, it's all right.
Right. Like leftovers or something, or just, yeah.
Well, you know, there's no budgets like the old days, you know, when they were giving us a million. I mean, they gave me $1 million on Geffen to do Up From the Ashes. Well, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of it on the record. It took like 7 months. I talked to my friends now. Yeah, we got a $20,000 budget. And I'm like, 20 grand to do everything and mix it? Yeah, huh?
Wow.
And plus they want to do it for 10, so everybody else can get a couple $1,000 in their pocket.
Right.
Jeez.
The world's changed, you know. You look at, I think the most famous album of the 80s or 90s was Chinese Democracy. I think it took, because I was on Geffen watching the process of Axl doing that, and I think it took him 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
And I think at the end of the day, I was talking to David Geffen. He goes, that's the most expensive record we ever, I think he spent like $4 or $5 million on it.
Yeah.
I gotta get back to, you said this is it. I mean, that's kind of crushing, but I completely understand and I respect that. Do you feel like the muse is gone too? Or do you, it's just too frustrating for you?
Well, I can't play guitar. Right. It's over. I had a Steinway piano. I was also a pianist. I played bass. I played drum. I play all the instruments. Luckily, my daughter, who's in her 30s now, I took her off to the piano teacher at six. And she's a classical trained pianist. So I said, well, I'll just give you my Steinway, which was in LA, which is a really good piano. So she was very happy, you know, and so I gave her my piano. And but I write a lot on piano too. I did. So I don't know what to do. I can't play guitar. I can't play bass. I can't play piano. I don't know how I could write another record. I just can't, because I'm not going to get all wooey, but I believe that when you get inspired to write a song, it comes from somewhere up there. I don't know where. I don't want to use the word God, but, you know, I always said I wrote my best songs at 2 a.m. when I was peeing. I mean, I'm being honest. You know, I'm not trying to be crude or crass.
But
I'd be half asleep and I'm peeing. I'm like, oh, no, not now. And I'm hearing this melody and this lyric and this guitar rip. I'm like, not now. I just want to go back to bed.
That's when Shane does his promo for the show. Sorry, like, Shane.
You know those little micro cassette recorders?
Yeah.
I literally went out and bought five of them. I had one on the toilet, and I had one on my nightstand, and I had one in the living room, and I had one, you know, but my studio was about a mile from the house, but I had tape recorders everywhere. And I just, you know, babble in, put the guitar on and just turn it on and record a guitar riff. I had amplifiers all over the house. And then I just sing into the microphone, you know, sing into the tape recorder. And then the next morning, like I said, you wake up and you go, that's cool. That's not, that is, that's not. And sometimes, you know, you wake up in the, because I swear to God, I've always said my best songs were the songs that I wrote in the middle of the night. And I'd sing it in my head over and over and over. I said, I'll remember that in the morning. And then I wake up and I'm like, how did that go? It's just gone, man. It's just gone. Yeah. You know, it comes into your soul and it just, it's gone. And I personally believe that musicians like the Beatles, which I respect highly, and Zeppelin, you know, they wrote, you know, they're only together for like 6 years. And wrote this huge anthology of amazing music. But I think you should be inspired. I had a little discussion once with Gene Simmons many, many years ago. And he lived up in Beverly Hills in Bandit Canyon. And I lived about 8 houses down. And I was putting a roof on my house. And he was driving by my house every day. And he said, what are you doing? He kept giving me shit about my house because he has a mansion. And I just had this little English cottage, you know, and say, Don, when are you going to build a real house? And I go, what do you mean a real house? I love my property. I've got lots of land. And but, you know, I was single and the kids are grown. I said, I don't need 8 bedrooms. I don't need 5 baths. You know, I just had a little new, it was very New England. Anyway, the roof was off and he says, hey, you know, I'm having Thanksgiving. Shannon's cooking. And Nick and Sophie, his son and daughter, were Dawkins fans. And we were playing the House of Blues. And I was actually shocked because, you know, Gene's not a, doesn't go out and party and stuff. And we were playing the House of Blues. God rest their soul. They tore it down. I was so pissed and they took it down Sunset Boulevard. Yeah. And I'm looking out and I see Gene out there and Shannon and the kids because they were Dawkins fans. So anyway, I went over to his house for Thanksgiving. And I had this illusion of there'd be dozens of people and maids and cooks and, you know, Shannon cooking a turkey and, you know, a couple friends, and Paul wasn't even there. So after we ate, Gene and I were talking about what we're talking about now, writing songs. And I said, I believe it's 80% inspiration and 20% work. And he said, you got it backwards. I said, what? He goes, it's 80% work and 20% inspiration. And I totally disagreed with him. I said, Jane, I totally disagree with you. You know, so everybody has their thing. But I said, no, Gene, it's you got to be inspired. And if I don't know if either one of you guys are musicians, but, you know, sometimes you pick up the guitar and you got nothing, you know.
Yeah.
Next day, you got nothing. Next day, you got nothing. 2 weeks go, you got nothing. you know, the band's going, did you write anything? I'm going, it's okay. You know, you just have to wait for that moment for the universe, however it works. And we had the luxury of COVID. We couldn't play anywhere. The promoter said, well, you can go out and play, but you can only play for up to 500 people. Yeah. And I said, well, what's the point? Except for Florida, they had no restrictions, no masks. We went down during COVID and played for like 25,000 people. So I just wrote, and John wrote, and the band and Chris and BJ were writing. So it took a long, long, long time. And we narrowed it down to what I feel were the 14 best songs. And the label ditched four of them, which hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
Because it just happened to be the four they ditched were me playing guitar and bass before I got crippled.
How did that feel? That must have been a gut punch.
I was really bummed. I said, well, these guys, I got four songs on the record that I'm playing guitar. I'm playing the bass. I'm playing the rhythms, the cleans. And they ditched them. And I said, why these four songs? You know, I mean, I don't know. They didn't know I was playing guitar. But I think I wrote them 3 or 4 years ago. After this happened, I think I was going through a dark depression. I mean, I was depressed, and it reflected on those songs. And Silver Lining said, we just think these songs are too grungy, they said. And I said, they're not grungy. They're just dark, you know? And so they took them off because they didn't want us to be in competition with ourselves. Because of this whole vinyl comeback, we're back to square one we were talking about. We can only, you know, you can only put 10 songs on a record, five aside. We can put 14, 15 songs on a CD. And they said, well, if we put out the CD and we put out the vinyl, well, people are not going to buy the vinyl. They're going to buy the CD. They get more music, right?
Yeah.
You get like 14 songs. Yeah. And I said, well, so what? Look at Metallica. Load one, load two, load and reload. I think there's like 15 songs in that CD.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah.
I mean, those guys, they put a lot of music on there. And my thinking was, you know, the way things are in the world now and the prices, give the fans more bang for their buck, you know? And if you don't like a song, skip forward to the next one. But they didn't want it. They just wanted 10 songs. Not to be in, so we wouldn't be in competition with our vinyl. And I said, all right. So we took four songs off, and I'm hoping, I mean, I'm really proud of those songs. Even John and Chris and BJ said, man, those are really good songs, but hopefully they'll see the light of day. And we were just talking the other day as I'm doing press and we're doing the video. I said, well, we have almost half a record.
There you go.
I say no more records.
Right.
But I'm trying to say as well, we're almost halfway there. We got four.
Right.
You know, John writes a couple, we'll have seven or eight, and maybe you know, the old saying, never say never. So maybe we'll make another record, but right now, no, I think this is it. And I might be eating my word. You and I might be talking in a couple of years going, tell me this was your last record.
Let's go back to the tape. No.
Gone. What happened? Yeah. You told me this was it.
Yeah.
And now we got another record, but I honestly didn't realize that 10 years had gone by since Broken Bones. I mean, it seemed like 5 years. And then we put out the lost tapes. That was totally an accident. When I moved out of LA to New Mexico and found all these tapes from 1977, 1978, 1979, and I'm moving my shit out of the garage and I'm looking at these tapes, reel to reels, and I see the name Michael Wagner, Hamburg. And he sees the studio. Oh, there go the dogs. kill, attack. Yeah, they don't listen to me. And so there's no more tape, you know, 2-inch tape. So I found all these tapes and they were 40 years old. And everybody said, there's no more tape machines. So we had to go find tape machines. And then there's a little trivia. When a tape sits for 40 years, the tape kind of glues together because it's magnetic. So the tape starts to stick together. So you have to bake them in a convection oven for like 3 hours and try to unglue it. And then you transfer it to a digital hard drive and you usually get one pass, two max. And we found a studio, Total Access, and they transferred it. And he said, I'm going to put this tape on there, but if it just like goes flying apart and shreds, I'm not responsible. And I said, okay, we'll give it a shot. So we did do the lost tapes a couple of years ago. And, you know, I had to have to chuckle because I was probably 20. And my voice kind of sounds like Mickey Mouse. My voice was, I was an alto. And I was like, God, I sound like I'm 10 years old, you know? So I put it out. You know, it's kind of interesting for the hardcore fans to see where I started when my first tour of Germany in 78, 9, and then where I am now. So I thought it'd be a retrospective. I can't say all the songs are good. So we did that. And now, but I'm really, really proud of Heaven Comes Down. I'm sure every musician you guys talk to say, it's our greatest record ever. It's amazing, you know? It's going to be a massive hit. I don't say that. You know, I'm proud of it. I think if you guys have heard the record, some killer songs on there, you know? And I just think it was an act of God. Because of COVID and my paralysis and, you know, my bass player shattered his right arm. Chris shattered it in 10 places. I think they call it the humerus bone. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And Chris was really in deep shit. They wanted to cut his arm off.
My bass player.
And I said, they're not serious, right? He goes, no. He likes to do, I don't know what you call it. When you take like bicycles and you go off trails and I think they call it BMXing or something. Not like on derailers, like stingrays, you know, little bikes. And he's like 6'2". I mean, I said, you look awful, you know, big on that bike. I'll show you the picture of his arm. Talk about damage. Can you see that?
God. Oh man, yeah. Wow.
That's some serious pins.
13 6-inch screws and a titanium plate.
Oof.
That's right at the top of his shoulder.
Damn.
So that killed us for a year. He shattered his arm. You know, he didn't know if he'd have an arm. And they said, we'll put all these screws and put you all back together like the Bionic Man, but there's no guarantees it'll take. So same with me. So he was down for a year. I didn't want to change musicians. And it's kind of funny now, you know, in the old days, we're all showing each other pictures of girls as boobs and butts. And, you know, it's true. I mean, it's true, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yes, it is.
There's my little photo.
Oh, yeah.
That's 13 titanium screws and 2 titanium plates.
Oh, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's
That's what I was. Okay, I thought.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Like, that's a really pretty sunset.
That's a picture of me looking out my bedroom. Here you go. Try that.
Oh my God. Oh,
wow.
It's like Frankenstein, right?
Oh man.
That's bad, man.
Yeah.
So I got screwed. He got screwed. And it just all these problems kept happening. John Levin had to have surgery on his neck. His hand was going to sleep. And he had to go to a specialist. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. We used to make jokes in the 80s that someday we'd be doing the wheelchair tour.
Right.
These really cool wheelchairs with really, see, you could hot rod their wheelchair the most. Who had the fastest electric motor. And we'd rock them out like Axel had his chair. And
yeah,
you know, we'd be zipping around the stage on our wheelchairs with our guitars. And it kind of came true. We all got crippled. So everything just kind of slowed down, 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 and down. Chris got injured. John got injured. I got paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And it kind of pissed me off that, like, we're going to make a great record. Nothing's going to stop us. And in my opinion, we did.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
What do you think all the other bands calling it quits right now? Like, Kix just wrapped up. Big fan of Kix. I don't know if you are. They were a tight little band.
They were great. You know, we did a couple. Whenever we go to Maryland,
Yeah.
The headline above us. And I'm like, really? We sold 10 million records. They had a couple of hits, but you know, they're like, I think I'm pretty sure it's from Maryland.
Yes, it is.
And when we get to that neck of the woods, we would play with Kicks. And the singer's great. You know, I love the band. Great songs, great singer. Jesus, when I think we played with them last year, I mean, I was like, damn, I wish I was younger. He's still active. He's animated on stage. He's jumping around, man. He's got the moves. He's thin and fit. And I'm going, and he still sings great. I'm like, I don't remember his name, but we chatted. I go, man, that band's still rocking. So I'm surprised you just told me that they're retiring.
Yeah, they played their last show at Meriwether Post Pavilion in Maryland.
Love that venue.
Yeah, it was just kind of hard. They were my band when I was a real little. They were the ones that got me into metal. But I mean, we're losing them. Larry Mullen of U2 stepped down from the chair. Joey Kramer of Aerosmith. Steven Tyler can't sing right now and may be in jeopardy. And we talked to David Coverdale a couple months ago, and he can't tour because he was ill, and his voice, he won't do it unless his voice is right.
No, I did two Whitesnake tours. Well, we did Scorpions, Whitesnake, Doc, and Sebastian Bach. And David and I had long conversations because I've had my problems with my voice. And over the years, I'm good, I'm bad, I'm good, I'm bad. And I just couldn't figure it out, you know. And at the end of the day, I found out I snore. I have sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. So I went to a sleep study, you know, and you're doing all night long. It trashes your vocal cords.
Yeah.
Because I'd be on the road, we're in a tour bus, and you're sleeping like a vampire. I'm just a little bunk. And if you sleep on your back, I snored. So I had to get the CPAP and the whole enchilada. And after about a month or two, I was like, man, my voice is getting better and better and better. And when I forget to wear it, you know, it is what it is. But I was really bummed to hear about Steven Tyler. He actually tore his larynx, which is really serious. And that's not good. And so the point was, Robert Plant, no offense to Robert, he's my hero, but as the tour went on, I could see he was struggling. You know, David was just struggling more and more and more and more. And I was struggling, you know. I mean, we get older. And I think fans they have no mercy. They grew up with you when you were 30 years old and you're singing way up in the stratosphere. And when you get older and you get to 60s or 70s, you're like, you don't sound like you did in 85. Yeah. Well, it's like a motor, you know, in a 327 Chevy, brand new engine, and you win the race. And the next year you use the same motor and you come in second. And 5 years in, if you don't rebuild the engine, you come in 10th. That's the same with vocal cords. They wear out. I've done thousands and thousands of concerts in my career. So, but then there's the people that are blessed. Ronnie James Dio. He did his last live recording at Radio City Music Hall. I popped in the studio when he was in there doing some overdubs.
Yeah.
It sounded amazing. And he had cancer, terminal cancer. And I was like, and I remember looking around and he was telling the engineer, let me do it again. I can do it better. And I was thinking, nah, it was perfect.
Yeah,
right. Amazing. And he was, you know, not well. But you got people like Glenn Hughes. He's in his 70s. He sounds just like he did when he was in Deep Purple 40 years ago, you know? Some people are
insane. Yeah. Do you think that's where sometimes fans forget that, you know, you're human too? You know, the voice is an instrument, right? It's the body. It's, you know, I don't know. I wonder that. Times, you know,
I don't think people understand. They're just, you know, when your strings wear out and they start sounding like crap on your guitar, you put a new set of strings on.
Yeah,
you know, they get dull and they sound like crap and they have nothing. But we can't do that, you know, with your vocal cords. I remember there was about 3 years that the singer in Cinderella just stopped. And I saw him again, and he'd had surgery. I think they put some like titanium stuff in his vocal cords. And he went to Ron Anderson, who's now passed away, who was like the famous vocal coach. I went to him too. Everybody went to him. And he came back because, you know, he sang, what the hell's his name? In Cinderella.
Tom Kiefer.
Really brilliant musician. Plays sax, plays piano, plays acoustic. But you know, that Shake Me All Night, I mean, he was singing so high.
Way up there.
How's he going to, you know, he sings way in the hell up there. Yeah. It hurt my voice listening to him. And I thought, how's he going to maintain this, you know? And he lost his voice and he had to do a lot of recovery and rehab. But it just seems like the fans sometimes are just, don't have any mercy on us old guys.
Yeah!